Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio, where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. It is Wednesday, October 11th, joined by Mr. Aaron Zommers on the ones and twos. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with our Wisconsin Revolution. Aaron, how you doing on the Wednesdayest Wednesday of the week?
Yeah, feeling good on a Wednesday.
And yeah, I'm feeling good today. I have a ticket to go see Bob Dylan in Milwaukee tonight.
Wow. Exciting. I didn't even know Bob Dylan was going to be in Milwaukee, but thanks for the heads up, Aaron. I might have had to swoop in and get a ticket with you there, but I think we got to maybe edit that the feeling good on a Wednesday cut and have like multiple different versions of it so that we can make more of a scale as to how good you are feeling on a Wednesday. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Like a slightly more depressing version, a slightly more upbeat version, a slightly more, I don't know. I'm thinking you ever go into a doctor's office and how they provide you a chart with 0 to 10, how are you feeling? And each smiley face is like progressively like in more and more pain, but like a cartoon version of it.
Yeah,
I'm
definitely
imagining that, but for this clip.
Do an audio version of that chart.
Yeah, we'll work on it. We'll figure it out. We can workshop that in the coming days. It's Wednesday, the most Wednesday of the week. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call. Shoot us a text, 844-967-278. Now, we're going to be all over the map a little bit, Aaron, because there are stories from across the country that I think are worth covering, as a lot of them do relate back to Wisconsin in one way, shape, or form. Of course, we'll provide context to that when we get to those stories. But starting off, I would like to kind of continue the conversation from yesterday. If you missed yesterday's episode of Town Call, we had an incredible, incredible episode lined up. We were going to be speaking with State Representative Chris Sinicki, the representative of the 20th Assembly District comprising of Cudahy, St. Francis, and Southern Milwaukee. Unfortunately, we did not have the time to get to Representative Sinicki, so we will be rescheduling that conversation where we were going to discuss the Committee on State Affairs public hearing regarding Assembly Bill 439, better known as Brewers Stadium Funding Package, that Representative Sinicki sits on. But Civic Media was doing special broadcast coverage of President Biden's statement on the Middle East. President Biden evidently was on a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which pushed back the start of his press conference. I am a word salad today. Until 1 p.m. So Town Call wasn't able to start on time. We were able to have this conversation a little bit, Aaron, and there's some more developing information regarding the legal opinions presented to Robin Voss from his what would we even call this? Committee? I mean, they had no official responsibility. Advisory sessions. Remember, he sought the legal opinions on impeachment from former Supreme Court Justice David Prosser, as well as former Justice Patience Rogensack, which we found out yesterday from the Freedom of Information Act requests on David Prosser's communications with former Justice Rogensack. And former Justice John Wilcox was the third member of this committee. The committee advising Robin Voss that they had no legal standing to pursue impeachment, that it was politically divisive, it was partisan rhetoric, and that, frankly, Justice Protasiewicz had done nothing that demands her recusal, therefore impeachment is not on the table.
These are not my words.
Oh, go ahead, Aaron.
She had, in fact, not only done nothing worthy of impeachment, she had done nothing yet.
Nothing in general. Yep, she has not yet heard a case. And those are not my words, so don't take my word for it. That was former Justice David Prosser. Now, this conversation is something that I think we're going to end up coming back to time and time again over the next couple of weeks, months, and potentially even years, Aaron, because there is so much to pack in this story, particularly around the hypocrisy of a couple of the current Supreme Court justices, who have ruled one way when the situation benefits themselves and now have essentially done a 180 and tried to make the opposite argument when it directly impacts them in a way that doesn't necessarily benefit their worldview in this situation. A progressive Supreme Court justice won their statewide election in the state of Wisconsin, and some of these conservative justices are not happy about that. I want to refer back to previous cases that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has heard in the past couple of years, including the 4-2 ruling to end a John Doe investigation into whether ostensibly independent groups had illegally coordinated with Scott Walker's 2012 gubernatorial recall campaign. Each of the four justices who ruled to toss out the investigation heavily benefited from campaign spending from the groups under investigation during their own elections for judicial office. Their misguided ruling greatly reduces Wisconsin's legal barriers separating political campaigns from supposedly independent groups, which post Citizens United are not subject to campaign finance limits. This is according to the Brennan Center. And they noted that some of these entities involved in this case, such as the Wisconsin Club for Growth, had reportedly spent $400,000 for Justice Annette Ziegler in 2007, $507,000 for Justice Michael Gableman, yes, that Justice Michael Gableman, in 2008, $520,000 for Justice David Prosser in 2011, and $350,000 for Justice Patience Rogensack in 2013. The Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce spent an estimated $2.2 million for Justice Ziegler, $1.8 million for Justice Gableman, $1.1 million for Justice Prosser, and $500,000 for Justice Rogensack, while Citizens for a Strong America spent an estimated $985,000 in support for Justice Prosser. And now we are seeing Justices Ziegler and Bradley turning around and saying all of a sudden, no, Janet Protasiewicz must recuse herself because she has been funded by these entities that are going to be before the court. Well, that is not the case. She has pledged to recuse if the Democratic Party of Wisconsin was on these cases. They are not on either of the redistricting cases currently. But with Ziegler and Bradley, they have quite literally ruled on cases where in entities that have quite literally given them funding were involved in the case. So it's again, Aaron, I cannot reiterate this enough. Rules for me, not for thee. We are changing our stances and our opinions every day at this point, depending on what is more beneficial to the argument that we are currently trying to make.
It's very difficult to reconcile these actions with reality and with saying, oh yes, I'm a fair and impartial judge. And I really think that the only reason, I think there are two reasons that they're getting away with this. One, a lot of people just don't pay attention to politics and they don't know about it. And two, the people who do follow politics, if they listen to the farther right media, they just hear them saying, oh no, that's a lie, that just didn't happen. So it's either they hear nothing or they hear outright lies.
It's fake news, alternative facts.
People just don't know that this is happening. Otherwise, why would they accept it?
But on a grand scale. And we've seen, I mean, just from this panel itself. So Justice Wilcox was on the court from 92 to 07. Prosser served from 98 to 2016. And of course, Justice Rogensack served 20 years on the court. Her retirement this year created the vacancy that Justice Protasiewicz filled with her 11-point election win in April. Let's not forget, Aaron, that this was a landslide election. The people of Wisconsin made it abundantly clear what they were supporting here. But Prosser, a former Republican Assembly Speaker as well. So that's another interesting little wrinkle to this entire story, is that Justice Prosser was the Republican Assembly Speaker. He has experience both from a legislative and judicial perspective, sent Robin Voss the email on Friday advising him against moving forward with impeachment. This was after a state judiciary disciplinary panel rejected several complaints lodged against Justice Protasiewicz that alleged she violated the Judicial Code of Ethics with comments she made during the campaign. Of course, we touched yesterday on the emails that were turned over to the liberal watchdog group American Oversight as part of an open records request. That group is also suing, arguing that the panel created by Voss is violating the state open meetings law. This, Aaron, I'm surprised that this entire story hasn't received a little bit of national attention as well, because there are so many different working little moving parts involved that I think really provide an incredible microcosm of everything that's wrong with American politics at the national level. But we're seeing it done at the state level in Wisconsin, which has over the last 10 to 15 years kind of been a test ground, if you will, a breeding ground for some of the more extreme right-wing policies that certain think tanks and certain conservative movements have been trying to generate. And now to see this in our state coming to fruition after years and years and years of planning, it's an interesting development. I have to note as well, we touched on some of the individuals, but numerous justices, both conservative and liberal, have spoken out in the past on issues that could come before the court, although not always during their run for office. And a number of current justices, as we noted earlier, have accepted campaign cash from political parties and others with an interest in the courts and haven't recused themselves. But none of them, not a single one of them, received threats of impeachment like Justice Janet Protasiewicz, which currently is. I'm of the opinion that this is because Robin Voss is scared. The gerrymandered maps are his skeleton key, the ability for the conservative elected officials at the state level to stay in power for the foreseeable future, if not forever. They never had to worry about representing or answering to their constituents because the maps were so heavily gerrymandered that it just didn't matter. Well, now Fair Maps is coming before the Supreme Court, and some of these elected conservatives, particularly Robin Voss, don't really know how to react, so they're acting out. And he's trying to dig out whatever he possibly can to potentially threaten, maybe intimidate Justice Protasiewicz, who has not backed down in this situation. But again, other justices have received campaign finance advice. They have received money. They have received all of the above assistance in their campaigns from political parties and others with an interest in court cases and have not recused themselves, and they did not face threats of impeachment. If you want to tell me this situation is different, please give us a call. Shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'd love to hear your thoughts. We're going to continue this conversation after the break. We're going to hit up the phone lines to hear your thoughts on this morning's announcement of the members of the Republican panel that Robin Voss formed to advise on the potential of impeaching Justice Protasiewicz and much more. This is Town Call. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. It's Wednesday, October 11th, the Wednesdayest Wednesday of the week. We are continuing the conversation on Robin Voss's recommendations from the panel he put together regarding impeachment of Justice Protasiewicz. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Give us a call. Shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. First on the line, we're going to go to Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark, what are your thoughts on the impeachment panel?
Yeah, it's pretty rich considering that Annette Ziegler was actually given a public reprimand for judging on cases her husband was involved in. I mean, nobody ever brings that up, in terms of ethical violations, which was a clear ethical violation. I mean, common sense would put it as an ethical violation, but nobody ever wants to talk about it. And then the conservatives say, well, you know, just how wonderful the conservatives are on the Supreme Court. And that's not even close to some of the, and that is, you know, adjacent to some of the other, you know, violations, you know, taking money from the people. Then they show up, you know, 1 year and 1 day after they've given, you know, millions of dollars to your campaign, it's okay then to judge on them. That was Prosser back in the day. I mean, that it is just a, she's actually said she's going to recuse, but you know, it gets back, and you know, people are probably tired of me hearing this, how they came up with that, you know, the expansive definition they gave of contiguous to approve of these current districts, which apparently over 50% of the both assembly districts and Senate districts are not contiguous. They're not all self-contained. They all have little islands outside of the districts, and that apparently they said, well, if they're connected by a street, you know, in some fashion, they can be contiguous. Well, it's absolute nonsense. I mean, I actually took the time and went out looking Black's Legal Dictionary, and it actually says touching. I mean, it's not vicinity. You know, they use it's not the same as vicinity, in the vicinity of. It's actually touching is what it's supposed to mean, and that the ethical stretches that they've made, that the conservatives on our Supreme Court made to approve of the current assembly and Senate districts, to stretch the definition, constitutional definition of contiguous to include stuff, well, it's kind of in the vicinity of, is, in my mind, is a violation of ethics, including Justice Hagedorn, who actually did the right thing when it came to upholding the vote of the people in the state of Wisconsin, which lets you remember Pat Rogenstack, that Rebecca Bradley and Annette Ziegler actually voted to overturn the will of the people in the terms from the last election. People that voted in absentee and good faith, they wanted to toss out those votes. Roughly 200,000 votes they wanted to pitch. And that's what they should be held to account for. The ethical violation that was the betrayal of the voters of the people of the state of Wisconsin, that those three justices should be held accountable for.
Excellent point, Mark. And actually, one thing that you mentioned that I really want to touch on, because I think it's been a failure on my part to not mention it, so I'm really glad you did, Mark, was Justice Annette Ziegler has a long history of behavior that I think any impartial individual would immediately say, like, yes, that's not only is that questionable, that's wrong. That's ethically, morally, and judicially wrong. And I found an interesting piece actually over from the Superior Telegram from May of 2008, noting that the state Supreme Court, for the first time in history, disciplined one of its own members Wednesday, formally reprimanding Justice Annette Ziegler for mishandling cases as a Washington County Circuit Judge. Ziegler, 44 at the time, has admitted to violating the state's judicial ethics code by presiding over 11 cases involving West Bend Savings Bank, where her husband, JJ, earns $20,000 a year as a director. The court called her handling of those cases, quote, a serious failing, unquote. The record demonstrates that Judge Ziegler was a hardworking, diligent, and highly regarded circuit court judge, according to the unsigned opinion, but the judge's conduct at issue here is troubling. Justice Lewis Butler dissented in the case, saying Ziegler had clearly violated the judicial ethics code, but he said the panel of judges that reviewed her case should have gathered more facts to determine whether she publicly admitted violating the code before or after she was elected. So, this is not a first for Ziegler, who was appointed Washington County judge by Republican Governor Tommy G. Thompson back in 1997. She did not alert litigants that her husband served on the bank's board, and most of the cases were small claims in which the bank tried to recover unpaid debts. That is an unacceptable ethics breach, in my opinion, and I have seen no coverage of it outside of Mark reminding us. So thank you for that, Mark. I'm very grateful for that. The State Ethics Board separately investigated her handling of the cases in a settlement reached 6 weeks after the election. Justice Ziegler admitted she violated a provision of the State Ethics Code that says officials cannot act on matters in which they have a financial interest. So this is going all the way back to 2008, Aaron. We see a history of behavior like this from conservative justices. And I want to give a shout out to a piece over at the Recombobulation Area, friend of the show, Dan Schaefer, who was writing about that this week as well. who noted that for weeks, far-right legislators have been arguing that Justice Protasiewicz should adhere to a set of rules that Rebecca Bradley and Annette Ziegler have previously explicitly rejected. Now, in this case, because Justice Protasiewicz got contributions from a non-party to the case and because she campaigned for the office to which she's been elected, she apparently should step aside, which is a massive flip-flop from Rebecca Bradley, who said, we can't have a two-tiered system where far-right, who has said in the past that essentially justices are free of from campaign contributions because it is their job to rule on these cases regardless of who puts them in, freedom of speech, as we talked on yesterday. And Dan Schaefer made the point that for weeks, far-right legislators have been arguing that Justice Protasiewicz can't allow this two-tiered system of justice. However, far-right justices, it seems, have the ability to do whatever they want, ignoring precedent all willy-nilly. Dan notes Roe v. Wade as a pretty prime example of this at the national level, while having no recusal standard for themselves whatsoever, and then expect other justices who get elected with progressive support to face a completely different standard. Now, a number of Wisconsin Supreme Court justices, three of them, in fact, with conservative Justice Hagedorn taking the other side, quite literally voted to overturn the 2020 election and have made explicit promises regarding things such as abortion. They imposed Robin Voss's maps on the state over a gubernatorial veto when Voss didn't have the votes to override. These are partisan actors through and through, and now they seem to be desperate to maintain whatever semblance of power they had, and they are doing so in whatever way they possibly can. So, It's a very tough predicament to put ourselves in, Aaron.
Yeah, I have two comments about that. Number one, following in the footsteps of Justice Bradley, I think that Justice Protasiewicz should be able to do literally anything she wants and then just edit her Wikipedia page later to say it didn't happen.
Oh, low shot, but accurate.
Yeah, and aside from that, this really brings what appears to be a problem in nationally our whole judicial system, that apparently if you're a judge or a justice, you have no consequences for your actions. Like Clarence Thomas, me saying that name somewhere in Europe, Luke Mathers just had a shudder, and just a spike in blood pressure.
Luke felt a little heart palpitation there. Yeah. And he was like, what is that? Did somebody say the name?
Yeah. It's just extremely frustrating to have people who are supposed to be impartial, which of course is not always possible. That's understandable. But you'd think they'd at least be trying, you know, if they're in such highly esteemed positions that clearly they must have had to work very hard for. Wouldn't you think they'd want to put that hard work to use and like have a good name for themselves instead of just being jerks and selfish and corrupt? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It mystifies me.
And I do also want to provide a correction, Aaron. The words that I was quoting earlier and the statements that I was noting from the piece over at the Recombobulation Area was written by Sachin Chetta as a guest column. So my apologies. Gotcha. To Mr. Chetta. I misread the article as I was going through it, but it was a wonderful, wonderful piece. And if you're interested in reading on the right-wing recusal fairy tale, I highly, highly advise reading it, because he did his research. He went back and he found instances of hypocrisy from a number of these conservative judges and how it kind of plays into the story that we are seeing developing today. So, Aaron, we're going to move to the next segment. And I have a fun little segment for you today that I came up with this morning, actually. It's a joke, I guess, that we have run in the past, particularly around Friday headlines of the week. But it's going to be which former Wisconsin celebrity, I guess, for lack of a better term, that's probably not the best way to phrase it, but famous Wisconsin individual had the most embarrassing blunder this week. And I have three individuals whose story I want to touch on, and then I'll let you decide, Aaron, which of the three were the most embarrassing. I'm going to start with a piece over from frontofficesports.com noting that Brett Favre is refusing to release his taxes in the Mississippi welfare case. Favre has objected to all 27 requests from lawyers from the state welfare agency. He is among more than 40 individuals being sued over allegations of misappropriated funds. If you recall, this is the story that we have touched on quite a bit, actually, in the past, where Favre was essentially stealing from the poorest individuals in Mississippi in order to fund projects that benefited himself and his family, such as a new volleyball arena at the school that his daughter attended. Oh, geez, Brett Favre. Oh, geez, Brett Favre. One thing after another. He and Aaron Rodgers, it's like they're fighting for who can embarrass themselves the most. Did you see? This isn't one of my three, but Rodgers said on the Pat McAfee show either yesterday or the day before that he wants to have a public debate. He's going to team up with RFK against Travis Kelce and Anthony Fauci to discuss vaccinations. So,
God, that sounds extremely painful. I would rather gouge out my eyeballs with a rusty spoon.
It sounds just awful. But I mean, Travis Kelce does have football to play. So my guess is he would probably not be available to do that. But if Rodgers makes it back in 4 or 5 months after completely, you know, rupturing his Achilles, I've said it before, at 40 years old, man, maybe he's on to something. Maybe I got to give him the benefit of the doubt because that's just unhuman. My second most embarrassing individual of the week is Scott Walker, who, you know, would be a mainstay on this program if we were to make this a regular segment, who tweeted about the insanity taking place on liberal campuses, how they are dead wrong, and now it's time to let them know the truth, referencing everything going on in the Middle East. And he shared an image of a high-rise tower that was destroyed in central Gaza by the Israeli army, but he implied the opposite having been true, that it was a high-rise tower in Israel. So, you know, again, not doing his homework whatsoever, just sharing images or information that gets put in front of him just for the sake of it and expecting it to be accurate. Remember that Walker has a history of this. I remember the Guardian piece from early 2000, it was 2011, actually. I got it up right here now. 2011, where Scott Walker, the current governor of Wisconsin, fell for a prank phone call as he was duped by a caller pretending to be one of the right-wing Koch brothers, who at the time were some of his wealthiest backers. So Scott Walker and being duped by easily verifiable information seem to be a theme in this regard. And the third most embarrassing Wisconsin individual, a piece over from Politico, Democrats furious over Van Orden outburst during White House briefing on Israel terrorist attack. Multiple attendees described Van Orden as acting belligerent towards the Biden administration briefers when he asked questions. Derek Van Orden and acting belligerent in an official capacity. Who would have thought, Aaron? That seems so uncharacteristic of him, right?
I'd never peg him as one to do that.
Quote, he was rude and attacked the presenters. I thought they had very substantive things to say, but he just had this blanket attack saying this is the worst information I've ever had, according to Rep. Judy Chu of California, and basically attacking them for being incompetent. Very humorous coming from an individual like Derek Van Orden. So, Aaron, I ask you, which of those three stories, which Wisconsinite is the most embarrassing Wisconsinite of the week?
Those are all pretty embarrassing, I have to say. But I think that Scott Walker's, with the international implications and the easily verifiable false information around the deaths of, for sure, over 1,000, probably, I would imagine, nearing 2,000 people in the Middle East in an extremely complicated situation. It makes him look like an absolute tool.
And forcing himself into a conversation that he has no experience or expertise on whatsoever. So we're going to continue the conversation after the break. This is Town Call. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Well, I'm down on my luck. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. It's Wednesday, October 11th, the Wednesday of the week. We're talking Wisconsin news today, Aaron. That's a great song choice. Stuck in the middle of all these crazy former Wisconsinites, who is going to out-crazy the other? And on a Wednesday, I feel obliged to give as many shout-outs as possible to Dan Schaefer. So I will, where he had another tweet as well, noting that last fall he obtained video of a since-deleted Facebook Live from GOP State Senate candidate Dave I think it's Estensen, who was live streaming while walking to meet Derek Van Orden on January 6th. He discussed the call with Van Orden, who was, quote, on the wall, unquote. So Dan, doing the boots on the ground journalism, Mr. Van Orden embarrassing himself left and right, taking any opportunity he possibly can, whether it's yelling at Senate interns, whether it's yelling at people in libraries and young individuals working and volunteering at these libraries. He is just going to go out of his way to do whatever he can to be as embarrassing as humanly possible for the people of Wisconsin. And we got a text over at the text line from Mark from Prairie du Sac. The comment on Justice Rebecca Bradley was not a low shot. She is only correcting her Wikipedia page, likely because she did not have a change of heart, but because she thinks her comments hurt her politically and may point to cases where she may not be able to be impartial. I agree with you 100% there, Mark. I was kind of messing around with Aaron when I said, oh, low blow, because he was exactly right, that these individuals clearly recognize that not only is their legacy, I guess, on the line. Legacy implies good things, but I guess it could also mean negative influences that they've had on day-to-day life. But she recognizes that a lot of her behavior in the past is incredibly, incredibly questionable and would perhaps be used against her in future rulings, such as what we're seeing right now regarding redistricting. So she decided that editing her Wikipedia page evidently was the best way to make this information go away, as if that somehow makes the internet forget. Well, we know, Aaron, the internet never forgets.
It never does. And I know if I was in that position where I made comments in my younger days and they were on the internet and I am now in a position of power and that could hurt me, you know what I would do? I would acknowledge it. I would say, I'm accepting this position. Just so you know, there's some stuff out there I did when I was younger. I've since learned that, I don't know, learned how to not be racist or whatever. And I'm trying to fix these problems every day. And so I recognize what I did was wrong. Just say that you're trying not to do that anymore and just acknowledge it and move on.
I'm growing. I've matured. I recognize my mistakes and I'm trying to be a better person. It's the Streisand effect, right? If you're attempting to hide it or cover it up, you're just going to make coverage of it more and more immense. So
yeah, now she has an entry on her Wikipedia article about her editing her Wikipedia article. So that works out really well for her, I think.
Which is perfect. Chef's kiss. So, Aaron, something that I wanted to touch on for the final segment of today's show, and you and I talked about it briefly earlier. We agreed that while it's not directly Wisconsin, I think we both saw a path to relate it to Wisconsin, and it needs to be talked about. So we are going to be the ones to do it because somebody's got to do it. Might as well be us. Why not us, right, Aaron? Reading over from TheVerge.com, right to repair is now the law in California. California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed SB 244, or the Right to Repair Act, into law, making it easier for owners to repair devices themselves or take them to independent repair shops. Because California is one of the world's largest economies, this iFixit co-sponsored bill may make it easier for people all over the U.S. to repair their devices. The law, which joins similar efforts in New York, Colorado, and Minnesota, is tougher than in some of its predecessors. Manufacturers must make available appropriate tools, parts, software, and documentation for 7 years above production, or for 7 years after production, for devices priced above $100. And what this immediately reminded me of, Aaron, and you agreed when we were having this conversation pre-show, there are two companies in particular that I think of when I think of Right to Repair. That's Apple, and that's John Deere. Because in a lot of ways, Apple has, well, I mean, those two corporations have been the biggest anti-right to repair entities in the country. But they don't want iPhones and technology to be messed with because they want you to have to pay to upgrade it. And John Deere doesn't want farmers being able to repair their tractors themselves because they make money off of having the authorized individuals as the only ones who can, you know, repair these expensive pieces of machinery without voiding any prearranged agreement. So
and then, of course,
these entities, go ahead, Aaron.
Those authorized repairs are ludicrously expensive for the end consumer and for the stores doing the repairs. Because like in the example of Apple, if your MacBook breaks, instead of like you would do on any other computer, let's say your memory went bad, your RAM, you'd go in and you'd replace the RAM. On a MacBook, they're like, oh, no, you can replace the whole motherboard. And that is includes everything pre-attached. no individual fixing. Same thing with John Deere. Like, you're buying a whole new assembly instead of like a bolt to fix something.
Mm-hmm. And it's because there's only one authorized individual to make these repairs, it can be very, very difficult to schedule them, right? People have lives, people have stuff going on. Let's say your tractor breaks down and it's farm season. You now have to wait 2 or 3 weeks to be able to harvest because you need to wait for this individual to be able to come out to your farm and repair your tractor. That's absurd. It's absurd. On top of the economic ramifications of, you know, forcing you to essentially overcharge people for fixing a product that should not be nearly as expensive because you have a monopoly on the ability to repair it. This is the kind of, I hate to even say progressive because I don't think this is progressive legislation. I think this is no-brainer type legislation that the vast majority of Americans agree with. But because it's against what corporate America wants to push, it can sometimes be labeled radical or extreme. Now that we're going to start seeing some of these Americans are going to have the ability to kind of take advantage of some of these laws as they are being passed in some states across the country, and they're able to see how much it improves their day-to-day life, and they're going to be able to see how it makes their relationship to the products that they purchase and use easier. Hopefully that will be enough to convince others across the country that this is a project worth fighting for, and these are policies that we must support.
I hope so. Yeah, I've been following the whole battle for a right to repair for a long time, and it is incredibly, like, very heartening to see this happening and finally coming through.
Mm-hmm. So one step at a time, Aaron. We joke about it all the time, but baby steps. This is an issue that's been at the forefront of a lot of people, particularly around tech and farming's mind for years and years and years now, but it's coming to fruition in some U.S. states. Hopefully Wisconsin will be next. Thanks for joining us today, everybody. This is Town Call. We'll be back tomorrow. Professor Shelton is returning. The professor will be in class for office hours. We're going to be so excited to have him back after missing him last week. We're hopefully going to see you tomorrow as well. This is Town Call. Take it easy, party people.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.